Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. This is Rob Lamb.
And I'm Joe McCormick, and today we're bringing you a Weird House Cinema Rewind. This episode originally aired on, May 21st, 2021. This was Trancers 2. Everybody, meet your new husband, Jack Death.
Yeah, this one's a lot of fun. Tim Thomerson, Helen Hunt, Richard Lynch, time-traveling cops, psychic zombies, various wives, and the not-so-rigorous rules of time travel. We talk a little bit about time travel cinema in general in this episode.
Will Tim Thomerson marry both women? Listen in to find out.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Weird House Cinema. This is Rob Lamb.
And this is Joe McCormick. And today, it's all Time Cops. It's not the movie Time Cop. It's another Time Cop movie. This is one where, you know, there are different ways you get into a piece of B cinema. Sometimes you watch a trailer and it really grabs you. Sometimes you just hear the pitch and it gets the hooks in. But for me, this movie, Trancers 2, The Return of Jack Death, it lured me in with one of the best B movie posters I've ever seen. I can't remember how I first came across this. How did we get started on the Trancer train? You were talking about Trancers and then I found this poster, I think.
Yeah, a couple of things came together. I think I got a preview of a Full Moon Entertainment streaming channel in order to watch Shockwaves, and then forgot to unsubscribe, and so I had it for a month. Uh-huh. And then we were talking about Full Moon Entertainment, and the question was raised, I think, by Seth: are all the films in the Full Moon Entertainment catalog, are they all essentially Evil Bong and Ginger Dead Man? And I was like, no. There's some early stuff. I think there's some good stuff in there. Maybe the Trancer movies. I haven't seen them yet. And then the next thing I knew, I had a bout of insomnia. So I fired up Trancers 1 and started watching it.
Okay, that's right. So you were talking about Trancers 1 and you were pitching me on the concept, which sounded quite enticing. Sort of similar. It sounded like a cross between Time Cop and there's a series of video games. I've never played one, but the games are called Assassin's Creed. And the premise of them is that you don't physically in your body go back in time, but you can like send your mind back in time to inhabit the body of one of your ancestors. Is that right?
I think that's how it works. Yeah. I'm not really versed in those games either.
Okay. And so that's one of the basic plot mechanics of Trancers, right? That it has a drug-based time travel mechanism where you can send your brain, or at least your consciousness, back into the body of one of your long-dead relatives.
Correct. Yeah. Roughly speaking, if we're going to lean into what's going on, there are seemingly two methods of time travel in the film. There's the genetic ancestral drug technique to move consciousness, and a physical time travel technique with severe limitations. So there is a continuation or survival of consciousness in these films akin to reincarnation, as well as a consciousness-based model of time. And it would seem to indicate that time is largely an illusion created by consciousness and can be manipulated through pharmacology and manipulated to such a degree that then physical time travel is possible as well.
That's right. Trancers 2 gets deep. This is, I remember when I first signed up for Netflix many, many years ago, it was interesting because like you would tell it what movies you liked and then it would start suggesting its own like Netflix curated thematic subgenres for you. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of the little categories it curated for me based on the movies that I had liked previously was mind-bending thrillers. And so I think this is technically a mind-bending thriller.
Yes, it bends the mind.
A little bit, yeah. It bends it in multiple directions. But I got to come back to this poster. So you were telling me about Trancers. And then I looked up the poster, but ended up seeing the poster for Trancers 2, The Return of Jack Death. This thing is beautiful. It belongs in the Uffizia. It's so it's got a painting of the main guy in the movie, but I was not familiar with this guy. I guess his name is Jack Death.
That's D-E-T-H.
Right, like Megadeth, not like the actual word death. And in the painting, he looks like Elaine's boss from Seinfeld, you know, the guy with the like very smooth, slick back white hair and the dark eyebrows. And he's looking kind of like Sam the Eagle, looking kind of stern and handsome with a strong jawline. But he's got a long coat on. It's almost like, you know, he's like a flasher creep. But inside the coat, it's not his body. It's like a galaxy full of stars. And then there are a couple people standing with him, two women, each holding guns. One of them is Helen Hunt, kind of smiling in a mild way, holding a shotgun and wearing the mom jeansiest mom jeans that have ever been created. Oh, and they're also like standing on the surface of Mars, which doesn't correlate to anything that happens in the movie.
Right.
Do you know why in this poster Jack Death has a galaxy inside his coat?
Well, I mean, there's nothing in the film to indicate why this would be, but I guess if we lean into it, he's from the future. So he has a sci-fi nature to him. And if you can, I don't know, you're bending time and space. That's about as much as I can come up with.
Okay. So I guess one thing we should acknowledge is that this is yet another episode where we're covering a sequel without having covered the original film. And I think, Rob, you're going to sort of do recap duty for us.
Yeah.
To tell us about the first Trancers movie. But we do not apologize for doing this. In fact, I think some of my favorite episodes of Weird House Cinema have been where we covered a sequel without covering the original. I don't know why that often works out so well. Something about it is kind of liberating, but I feel like it's something we're going to keep doing, and we maybe even need like a dedicated word for like the sequelosity episodes. Or
yeah, because I think one of the reasons that it works is that when you're dealing with sequels, especially sequels of this caliber, you know, and sequels of genre films, there are at least one of two things are likely to be happening here. So on one level, a sequel is a chance to move beyond the establishing setting and origin stories and get into the meat of a new, fresh story, provided, however, that you don't have to then reset heaven and earth to make a sequel work. So I would say that a great example of this is Blade 2, where Guillermo del Toro did not have to deal with any of like the origin story of Blade for the most part, and just got to get into just run right into a new adventure with only minor resetting.
It's kind of like getting to start a movie in the second act.
Yeah. probably, I love this film, obviously, but a bad example of this would be Highlander 2, where everything was wrapped up in Highlander 1. So in order to do a sequel, they really had to reset heaven and earth and inject a whole bunch of new material.
There are a lot of sequels that have to essentially undo the previous film in some way in order to exist. And on certain occasions, that can be a kind of like bold and gutsy and admirable move. This is a widely hated movie, but one that does this in a way that I think could have been great is Alien 3. Alien 3, I mean, I guess I'm not going to spoil anything for a movie that's been out this long. Alien 3 begins by killing most of the characters that survived Aliens.
Yeah.
And
beloved just, characters.
Too. Yeah, beloved characters that all die right at the beginning. Actually, off screen. It's just like it happens in between the films. And a lot of people like this, but something about me always kind of appreciated, like, this could be the setup to a real powerful gut punch of a third Alien movie. Unfortunately, Alien 3 it's one of those movies that is, it's hard to say it's bad because I think it's essentially an unfinished film. We didn't ever get to see what Alien 3 would have been.
So, it has so many great aspects to it. I mean, it has a wonderful cast.
Pete Postlewaite, Charles S. Dutton. Yeah, it's got an amazing cast. Mm-hmm. And,
Charles Dance as a mostly likable human being, or at least a more relatable human being than he tends to play. I don't remember all the wrinkles in his character, but he wasn't a complete bastard, as I recall.
Charles Dance is just wonderful. Yeah, it has a great cast, has in a way a strong setup. It's just, yeah, like I said, it's basically an unfinished film that was nevertheless released and kind of really suffers for that. It's sort of held together by duct tape and paper clips. But that was all a tangent to say there are some cases where it feels like it can be really strong. Most of the time when your sequel has to undo the previous film, it's just really irritating.
How do you feel about Halloween 1, Halloween 2? Because Halloween 1 ends with like Donald Pleasance is like, finally, we have killed him. And then Halloween 2 begins with, oh, wait, my bad. I'm sorry. I missed him. Or he's not dead, you know?
I mean, Halloween 2 is not the worst slasher movie and not the worst slasher sequel. Like, it's a pretty competently executed slasher horror movie, but yeah, it's totally unnecessary, and it's quite clear that it was just kind of a cash grab. It's like, the first movie was really successful, we got to do another one. I mean, I don't think, it doesn't feel like Carpenter didn't even direct it. I think he co-wrote the screenplay, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be wrong about that, but whoever was all the creative forces behind it, it is a competently made horror movie, but their heart wasn't really in it.
Yeah. So, the next thing about sequels is definitely the rehash and redo area of sequel making. In its worst case, you have a like direct-to-video cash-in that is intentionally just completely lacking of the originality of the first film, but you also see this reverse, and that's when you have particularly a lower budget or an indie picture that does really well, and then the sequel is a chance to essentially redo it, hopefully with improvements to the budget, cast, script, etc. I think prime examples of this would be Evil Dead 2 and Phantasm 2, both of which benefited from larger budgets and are both kinds of sequels slash remakes. I know fans are torn on some of the issues regarding these, and you know, there are arguments about like what's better, Phantasm 1 or Phantasm 2. But undeniably, these are cases where the filmmakers got to go back and spend a lot more money, maybe with a lot more caveats attached to how they use that money. But still, they got to explore the same dream with more cash.
I don't know if the same is true of Phantasm 2 because I haven't seen it, but certainly with Evil Dead 2, there's a big difference, not just in budget, I mean, not just in the resources they had to work with, but in the tone of the movie. Whereas the first Evil Dead movie is like a dark, straight, gross horror movie. The second one is a comedy, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you get to tweak the tone even in cases, and then sometimes it can have great results.
But now, how does this apply to Trancers? Because if I'm not mistaken, I think the first one actually got a theatrical release, and this one, I don't know, but it feels extremely straight to video.
Yes, this one was straight to video, unlike the previous one. I couldn't find any information about the actual budget for Trancers 2, so this one maybe cost as much, maybe cost more, but I doubt it. I think it cost less. it certainly made at least one key upgrade, and that's in villain casting, which we'll get to in a bit. But they largely rehashed the plot of the first one, except with additional complications and additional characters. But I feel like they brought almost everybody back. So, you know, it's kind of like a cast reunion to a certain extent.
Okay, well, so if you're about to recap the first movie for us, the first thing I've got to know is it's called Transfers 2, The Return of Jack Death. Where did he return from? Did he return from the future to the past or from the past to the future?
No, he doesn't return from anywhere. He returns to your TV screen, basically.
Yeah, okay.
That's the only thing he returns to. Because there's talk of him returning to the future, but he does not return to the future.
Right.
He doesn't return to the future until Transfers 3.
So it just literally could have been called Transfers 2, Jack Death is in another movie.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so previously on Transfers. Okay, so Angel City of the 23rd century, it has a lot of problems. Most of Los Angeles is underwater, and a psychic mastermind known as Whistler, who uses his psychic powers to turn other humans into trancers, zombie-like thralls. You know, these are psychically controlled sleeper agents who can be triggered into a monstrous rampage. But luckily, you have some trancer hunters on the case, and there's none more excellent at singeing trancers than old Jack Death.
Jack Death is sort of the Harley Stone of trancers.
Yeah. So he's a pro at taking them out, pro at singeing those trancers. Meanwhile, the police actually have Whistler's body. They have the super bad guy's body, but they don't have his mind because Whistler, we find out, has used the time travel drug to send his consciousness back in time to 1985, where his consciousness now inhabits his ancestor's body. And his ancestor in 1985 is a police detective, so complications.
Uh-oh.
Now, while in the past, Whistler hasn't just been hiding. He's been hunting down and murdering the ancestors of his key enemies in the future, members of the ruling council of Angel City. So he's basically running a Terminator game on his enemies here. So Jack Death has been hired by the one remaining member of the ruling council to follow Whistler, quote, down the line, down the timeline, by using the time travel drug. And Jack Death's consciousness emerges in his own 1985 ancestor's body, a reporter in 1985 Los Angeles. But before he goes, he shoots Whistler's future body, his comatose body, dead before he goes. So he's kind of like, I'll go get him, but I'm not bringing him back alive. He's not coming back to this body.
Okay.
Too dangerous to live.
All right.
Okay, so
where does Helen Hunt come in?
She's coming. Okay, once in the past, he meets up with this punk girl named Lena, and that is Helen Hunt.
Okay,
and so she's in it. She's going to help him. She gets her eyes are open to the time shenanigans going on. So she's right there with him to help him fight the battle. They fall in love, etc. You know, as one would expect, and they hunt down the drunken, homeless former pro baseball player Hap Ashby, who is the 1985 ancestor of the future ruler who is in jeopardy. So in this quest, Death is aided by some high-tech equipment that is also sent back through time and space to him, presumably via a different time travel method. So once you've had your consciousness zipped back, they can send you a small box, like the size of a cigar box, that has a few special tools that you can use.
Does this include the watch that allows you to stop time for 10 seconds?
Yes. This includes the watch that gives you a long second. If you push a button, the long second is just pausing time for a second and letting you do some bullet time stuff.
Incredibly useful.
Yeah. But he also has two doses of a serum that he can use. If the serum is injected into somebody who is a consciousness from the future occupying a body, then it will kick that consciousness out and send it back to the future. So these two doses, one is to allow Jack Death to return to the future for his consciousness to leave his ancestor's body. The other dose is to send Whistler out of his ancestor's body. But since Whistler is dead in the future, he'll just go into oblivion.
Okay.
All right. So he defeats Whistler, but he faces a problem. Only one of the two consciousness-booting doses survived the battle. He can only inject one of them. He can kill Whistler, in the past and use the one dose to return himself, but that means killing the body that Whistler inhabits, which is an innocent man with a family. So instead, he ejects Whistler's consciousness into oblivion, thus sparing Whistler's ancestor, and remains behind in 1985 to marry Lena, played by Helen Hunt, and live in the 20th century.
Happily ever after with Helen Hunt in the 1980s in Southern California. Wow.
Perfectly serviceable movie, but I think in some ways a better movie, but ultimately I think Trancers 2 is more fun.
I'm going to guess that Trancers 2 is significantly funnier than the first movie.
Yes, it definitely leans into the comedy a little bit more without getting into like full-blown yuck a minute mode that you kind of see in the later Full Moon Pictures releases. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into some of that in a bit here. But Trancers 1 did have a few laughs, and I'll mention one or two of them as we go.
Okay, so that's the previous movie. What's the elevator pitch on the second movie?
Jack Death is back, baby.
Jack Death all over again.
Yeah.
I was trying to think, okay, I've got an alt pitch on the second movie, which is that due to unforeseen transfers, Jack Death realizes that, ooh, he had another wife in the future that he forgot to tell Helen Hunt about, and now she's back in the past. And so now he's faced with a dilemma. Must he choose between them, or can he marry both women?
Let's hear that trailer audio.
My name's Jack Death. I am a transfer hunter from the 21st century. It's been 7 years since I went down the line to old California. Life's been good. I thought I'd singe my last transfer, but nothing lasts forever.
Jack!
Trancers 2, The Return of Jack Death.
Jack, the 20th century must be getting to you.
You have no idea.
I actually haven't listened to this, but I imagine there's a really good In a World narrator in it.
The trailer, I actually don't advise watching the trailer in full, because the official one that's uploaded by Full Moon is like 3 minutes long and is basically a summary of the entire film. It shows you everything. And it's like, not that spoilers are going to ruin your enjoyment of Trancers 2, but I think it's worth going into fresh.
Oh, wait a minute. Then should people not listen to this episode before they watch?
Oh, no, they can do that. That's fine.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody who's been listening to Weird Al Cinema, you know the deal. We're going to talk loosely about the movie. We're going to talk about the people in it, and then we'll get more into the plot. So if you need to jump out halfway through, you know where to jump out at. If you need to go watch the movie and you don't want any spoilers. Otherwise, we're going to spoil pretty much everything.
Well, I greatly enjoyed Trancers 2, but I would not say a lot was hanging on the outcome of the plot for me.
Yeah, it's pretty predictable. You know what's going to happen.
All right. So who made this thing?
Well, Charles Band, of course. He's the director. He has an original story credit on this. Born 1951. We've discussed his bio before, but briefly, he's the man behind Empire International Pictures and then Full Moon Features, and he directed some really awesome 80s and 90s sci-fi and horror films, lower budget fare for sure, before going increasingly in the evil bong Ginger Dead Man direction. Mm-hmm. This is, I believe, our third Charles Band production, but our first film that he actually directed.
What were the other two? He was a producer on Robot Jocks, right?
Robot Jocks and Arena.
Two absolutely glorious films. And I think there's a Robot Jocks tie-in later on here.
Yeah, yeah. So he has 68 directorial credits, and I'd say most, if not all of it from recent decades, is certainly of the evil bong sort. Mm-hmm. But this movie is from the era in which Band was still making films that seemed to aim to be more genre action entertainment without just being, abject horror comedy and so forth. I'm talking stuff like 1982's Parasite, which starred Demi Moore. Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin from 1983, which I really enjoyed. That's a fun sort of otherworldly post-apocalyptic mashup thing. 1992's Dr. Mordred, which is kind of a Doctor Strange picture before we had a Doctor Strange picture.
Okay.
And these films were not critical hits by any means. I assume they made money of some sort since things kept going. But you know, many of them developed a following. And as a producer, Band played a role in bringing a lot of weird schlock to the screen. And I think, like, ultimately as a producer is where he has the most endearing value. You know, there's a lot of fun stuff going on in the Empire Pictures days, as well as the early Full Moon days. And even though the Evil Bong stuff is not for me, I recognize that that too seems to have its following. So fair enough.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page here. I love a good funny B horror movie, but ones that lean too hard on that intentionally, that try to be too funny, at a certain point they kind of step over the line of intentionality, and the silver loses its luster.
Yeah, or it certainly becomes harder to achieve, you know, perfection. I can think of some horror comedies that are really good, mm-hmm. And we'll probably mention one in a bit that I'm rather fond of. But I feel like it's just harder and harder to do. Whereas the sweet spot is trying and maybe not fully succeeding in making a serious horror or sci-fi film.
So one of the most hilarious things of our entire Trancers journey last night, Rachel and I watched Trancers 2, The Return of Jack Death, but also ended up researching other Trancers movies throughout mm-hmm. the evening. So, of course, you had Trancers in 1984, and then you had Trancers 2, The Return of Jack Death. This was 1991, which, as we've talked about on the show before, 1991 is maybe the most 80s year that ever happened. But it doesn't stop there. You've got Trancers 3, Death Lives, in 1992. Trancers 4, Jack of Swords, in 94. Trancers 5, Sudden Death, D-E-T-H again, in 94. And then Trancers 6. And Trancers 6 does not have a subtitle. It really should have. I think they should have kept going with the play on the word death. So it could have been Trancers 6, Death by Misadventure. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff you could do.
Yeah, I haven't seen Trancers 3 yet, but I want to. I actually have it queued up mm-hmm. because I think I'm on board for that one. I'm less thrilled about the idea of Trancers 4 and 5 because I understand those are kind of notoriously bad ones. One was, I think, filmed in an East European castle, and some of the people involved in that one were paid in money that couldn't leave the country, if I read correctly. And the other is a Western. So we have, like, God. Medieval Trancers, Old West Trancers, and then Trancers 6 is doesn't even have Jack Death in it.
Well, it's got an Old Western. So this is like going in the same arc as the Tremors sequels. Tremors and Trancers are kind of running parallel.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't really do Trancers in space because it's already sort of, well, I don't know. Maybe they could do Trancers in space. Anyway.
That would explain the galaxy inside his coat.
That would. Maybe they go into space in 3. I don't know. Like I say, I haven't seen 3 yet.
One thing I was really surprised by, Trancers 4 and 5, which are the ones you're saying are notoriously awful, were both apparently directed by David Nutter, who does tons of high-profile TV work, including directing many Game of Thrones episodes that are some of the most memorable ones. I think he did the Red Wedding episode, and he did a bunch of X-Files episodes that are, like, really well-remembered. I think he directed Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose.
Yeah, he's a trusted hand in TV and presumably film direction as well. But I mean, yeah, these productions like Game of Thrones are essentially film productions.
Charles Band or whoever owns this now, if you're looking for some amateur filmmakers to make Trancers 7, Death by Misadventure, I think, hey, we're your people. Get in touch.
Now, the writers on this one, I should point out that Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo wrote the first one. These are also the guys who wrote Arena. We mentioned them briefly in that episode of Weird House Cinema. Danny Bilson went on to write screenplays for The Rocketeer and The Five Bloods, which came out just last year, I think. Mm-hmm. I think was pretty acclaimed. That's a Spike Lee film.
Mm-hmm.
And then the writers on this picture, the screenwriter is credited as Jackson Burr. Not a lot of information on him, but he was active from 1989 through 1994, did a number of screenplays for Full Moon and some other B movies. Most notably, he did the screenplay for the Full Moon feature Subspecies.
All right, I think we got to get into the cast because we've said the phrase Jack Death probably 35 times already. Who plays Jack Death? Well, this is a glorious chuck roast of a man named Tim Thomerson.
Yes, Tim Thomerson, who I think it's safe to say is a B-movie icon of sorts. He's still very much around, still active, born 1946. I was looking him up because I hadn't really researched him before this. I just knew that he was in some Full Moon pictures, and you know that was kind of that as far as I knew, that was where he emerged from. But he actually started out as a stand-up comic and was successful at it in the late 70s and very early 80s. I mean, he was showing up on late-night talk shows and so forth.
Yeah, you shared a bit that you found on YouTube. I mean, a lot of 70s and 80s stand-up comedy, I feel like it's like there's the really good stuff, and that's really good, and then almost everything else is just dreck. Yeah. And, I mean, I can't say that the video you shared was amazing, but it maybe was a little bit better than dreck.
Yeah, I'm just ready for the worst when I look at pretty much any stand-up comedy, but especially stand-up comedy from years past. And for the most part, it seems like he had kind of a zany 70s guy kind of vibe. He had a big bushy mustache and did some sort of like some like post-stoner kind of humor.
Yeah,
kind of a watered-down Robin Williams vibe as well. Like imagine a toned-down Robin Williams who lifts.
Yeah, I would say surfer guy Robin Williams, who does a lot of mouth sound effects and occasionally uses props.
Yeah. So ends up he has kind of a zany entertainment origin, especially when you compare it to stuff like his role as Jack Death, who certainly has some comedic corners to it. And you see some of that comedic energy bleed through in his performance here. But for the most part, it's kind of a noir-esque hardened detective kind of a role, you know? And he has the face for it. He's, you know, ruggedly handsome kind of guy.
Oh, exactly. I chose my Chuck Roast phrase very carefully because I think that sort of community. He's very ruggedly handsome, classically meaty noir guy, but with an extra little twist of absurdity.
I was kind of surprised though. Like he has this very. You know, I don't know. Like he has a, like blondish, whitish hair in this, and he has this very like very rugged features. And I looked it up to just see how old he was when they filmed this Trancers 2, and he's 45. So he's just 3 years older in this film than I am right now. So and he was 38 in the first Trancers, and in that I would have assumed that he was like in his late 40s. So yeah, I think he had a very cured look about him.
Yeah, he has a face that speaks of much tobacco and beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. They're very, very sun-dried. So his career trajectory, again, stand-up comedy, but then he was doing a lot of TV work, popping up on stuff like Laverne and Shirley. And then he did a little film in 1983 called Metal Storm, the Destruction of Jared Sin.
Oh.
That was directed by Charles Band. And so the following year, he did the first Trancers film.
Okay. Well, you've mentioned this a couple of times now, and I hear the elation in your voice. So maybe I got to watch Metal Storm.
I need to watch it again, but I remember it being fun.
All
but
right.
Yeah, but the thing is, once you go to band camp, you're in band camp.
Okay.
So he did Trancers and then the other Trancer films, with the exception of the sixth one. He also starred as Dollman in the Dollman films. He played this character, Brick Bardo, who's like, it's like a miniaturized human gimmick. I haven't actually seen any of those, but they were apparently successful enough in the Full Moon universe to do stuff like Dollman versus Demonic Toys.
They've got different franchises that are all about killer toys. They've got Puppet Master, Demonic Toys, Dollman. Am I missing some others? Do they have some killer G.I. Joes?
I think technically when you get into like the Ginger Dead Man stuff, like Ginger Dead Man is like a small gingerbread cookie that kills people.
Consistency.
But he was also in some other stuff. He was in Zone Troopers, Nemesis, Iron Eagle, Cherry 2000, which is a good one. He's also in Near Dark, the excellent vampire film from Catherine Bigelow with Lance Henriksen in it and Bill Paxton, among others.
Yeah, that's one of the best vampire movies ever.
I think he plays a dad in that. I don't really remember Tim Thomerson in it.
Yeah, the main character's dad, maybe.
Yeah.
So Rachel and I were discussing a theory last night that Tim Thomerson edits Wikipedia because we were drilling into the wikis for like to see what was going on with the Deep Trancers sequels after we finished the movie. And we came across some hilarious unsourced claims like on the wiki for Trancers 6, which, by the way, it doesn't have a subtitle, but the tagline on the poster is same attitude, different sex. So I think it's that Jack Death this time comes back and inhabits the body of an ancestor who was female.
Yes. In fact, I could be wrong, but it might be his own daughter. I'm not sure.
What?
Yeah.
How would that make sense?
It would still be
in
his
future of. Okay.
It would still be his. Don't try and make the time travel in these movies work. It'll just hurt your brain.
Stop. Okay. But anyway, you get to the reception section of the wiki for Trancer 6, it has one sentence in it. The reception section reads, "Reception for the film has been overall negative, mainly due to the lack of Tim Thomerson." And I thought about that scene in The Simpsons where Homer's reading the list of suggestions to Roger Meyer, and he's like, "Whenever Poochie's not on screen, all the other characters should be asking, where's Poochie?"
Yeah, where's Thomerson?
Yeah.
Yeah. He is the center of these pictures. It's hard to imagine one without him.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Oh, but we got to get to the real star power here. We got a couple of stars in the sky of Trancers 2. One is Richard Lynch. The other is Helen Hunt. This is
yes.
Academy Award-winning actress.
That's right. The Helen Hunt, born 1963, very much active today, plays Lena Death in this because she's married to Jack Death at
right.
this point.
Yeah.
Now, don't worry, Helen Hunt fans. This was several years before her award-winning role in As Good As It Gets. Her career hadn't quite taken off yet. At the time of Trancers 2, she had just done additional voices on Captain Planet. And afterwards, she was in a really weird supernatural Western with Bruce Dern called Into the Badlands, which I remember being good. I saw it when I was a kid, but I remember liking that. But she hadn't quite taken off yet. She'd come back for Trancers 3 in 1992. Uh-huh. But shortly after that, I think she had moved beyond the orbit of Full Moon and was on to bigger and brighter things.
So Helen Hunt in this movie plays Jack Death's wife in the past, who is going to come into conflict when his wife from the future comes back to the past.
Right.
And Helen Hunt is an exceptionally good actress, and this is in many ways an exceptionally poorly written role, which is always a really enjoyable collision of forces when you have like a great actor saying ridiculous lines. Mm-hmm. And some of my favorite parts of this movie were the scenes where Helen Hunt is just rattling off paragraph long lines about the mechanics of time travel and complaining about the fact that he has another wife that she didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the real chef kiss things in this movie. And it's also different because she's a very down-to-earth good actor. Unlike there are other actors like who could be really great but also were in lots of B-movies delivering ridiculous lines, like, you know, I think Donald Pleasance. But somehow Donald Pleasance, I think, fits more into the B-movie world when he's in it. Mm-hmm. Here it's just somebody who's clearly got like more screen presence than this movie demands, doing these lines that are absolutely absurd, but doing them, you know, doing the job.
Yep.
But also, oh my God, her costuming in this movie. I guess it was part of the fashion in 1991 to have these like really high-waisted loose jeans, but her mom jeans in this movie are just extraordinary. They explore previously unknown reaches of mom jeansiness. They're almost kind of like the MC Hammer pants, but jeans.
Yeah. Yeah, and like you said, she has some real acting challenges in this film that she's, you know, totally has the chops for. But she's put in some really challenging scenes with the very green actor Megan Ward in this. It's in some Bechdel flunking dialogue.
Yeah.
Where it's just all about Jack Death. It's just two female characters talking exclusively about the male character, and you know, Helen Hunt clearly has this screen presence and this talent. And Megan Ward is just not there yet.
That is funny. Almost any time. Well, it is like Poochie. Everybody should be saying, where's Poochie? Because in this movie, if Jack Death is not on screen, basically the other characters on screen are talking about, where's Jack Death? Who's going to get to marry Jack Death?
Now, speaking of Megan Ward, she plays Alice Stillwell, who is Jack Death's first wife from the future.
Mm-hmm.
Born 1969, she was an Encino Man. She's done a lot of TV work, including some work on General Hospital. So she's not in the first Trancers, and I'll give her the benefit of the doubt and assume that she grew as a performer after this. But yeah, she's green as grass in Trancers 2 and has no help from the dialogue, you know, either. So it's I can't place all the blame on her by any means. But the result is she kind of ends up dragging down every scene she's in, except her scene with a character named Rabbit, which we'll get to in a bit.
Yeah, she gets through her lines, but she's pretty consistently kind of low energy, like not really amped up to the absurdity level that the rest of like the older actors were going for.
She would have worked great in the humanoid. Like she has humanoid level energy. But the thing is, in this, everybody else has much higher levels of energy or intensity.
Yeah.
And speaking of intensity,
the legend. In fact, this actor has real legends about him that I wasn't even aware of before we started researching for this. It's time to talk about Richard Lynch, our villain for the film.
Yes. Richard Lynch plays Dr. Wardo, who the nature of this character is kind of confusing. We'll get into that in a bit. Mm-hmm. But Lynch was born in 1940, died in 2012, a true B-movie legend and was a huge upgrade for the Trancers franchise here because the chief villain, Whistler, in the first film was played by this guy, Michael Stefani, who was fine. I mean, I'm not saying Stefani was bad, but he didn't have the smoldering intensity of Richard Lynch. Lynch had a really signature look. You know, he had look up a picture of him if you don't remember him. Bright blonde hair, sharp nose, the scarred face, and I never knew the history on his on the scars that he had. In fact, I'd say a lot of the films I've seen him in, the picture quality is not really good enough to pick up on it all that much. You know,
right? When you're watching like a YouTube rip of a Czech dub of Scanner Cop 3, you don't really pick out the fine detail of his face as well.
Right. But something that's mentioned in the obits include for him, including the New York Times obit for Richard Lynch, is that according to Lynch, he suffered scarring in 1967 after he set himself on fire while under the influence of LSD in New York Central Park.
This is one of those stories that I didn't know until yesterday, and I was like, how have I never read this before?
Yeah, yeah. It seems like the kind of thing I would have picked up on. It. Sure enough, if you look it up on YouTube, you can find a scene from the documentary LSD Trip to Nowhere. And I think it's Trip to Where. LSD Trip to Where? A documentary from 1968. And it's just some rough interview footage of a young Richard Lynch whose injuries are far more apparent in this early footage. I don't know if he's, still hasn't healed up from reconstructive surgery or what the exact details are, but he's talking about this experience, and it's a rough watch.
So he was appearing in basically an anti-LSD scare film.
Yes. But anyway, it goes beyond Lynch's looks, though, because he was a solid actor who brought just real menace to his many, many villainous roles over the decades. There are a lot of character actors who had, odd looks to them, and have, particular features of their appearance that mm-hmm. lend well to horror and sci-fi. But some of them clearly don't have like the acting chops to back it up. I think Lynch is one of those guys that clearly did have the acting chops.
Yeah, I agree. One thing that's interesting is that I noticed later touches of this in his adult roles, but it's less there. It's more there in that early interview from the 60s when he's young, is that he has that kind of classic transatlantic accent. Mm-hmm. He sounds a little bit like William F. Buckley when he talks.
Yeah. So his credits include such films as God Told Me To, the excellent, weird Larry Cohen film in which he plays an alien, hermaphroditic, Christ-like being that has come to New York City. He's in The Seven Ups, which is not a genre piece. It's just like a crime movie. He was in The Ninth Configuration. He was in The Sword and the Sorcerer and The Barbarians. So he definitely got into the medieval fantasy type epics, mm-hmm. generally playing some sort of evil sorcerer. He was in Scanner Cop.
Oh, yeah.
He was in Necronomicon Book of the Dead, and he's one of many B-movie and genre icons who Rob Zombie brought into some of his films. So you'll find him especially in The Lords of Salem.
I would say he also is in the B-movie Hall of Fame for his participation in Warwolf.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. He's in that, too.
He's Noel, yeah.
Now, actually, now that I mention it, I can't recall if he actually got to complete his scenes for Lords of Salem. He might have been... that might have been towards the end of his life. It's possible that he's not in that at all. He may have just been originally part of the cast, now that I think about it. But I think he was in Rob Zombie's Halloween movie.
That sounds right.
Yeah, he also showed up on Star Trek The Next Generation, Murder, She Wrote, and 6 Feet Under. So yeah, Richard Lynch was in a lot of things. He was in a lot of B-movies, played a lot of bad guys, and was just really good at it.
Did he ever play a good guy? I can't recall that ever happening. I've never seen a movie where he wasn't a villain.
I don't know. I mean, he had to have at some point, but yeah. I mean, and I think he could have done it. I mean, especially as he got older, he could. Yeah. I could see him leaning into, because you see out of character photographs of him, and he's just, he's just this older dude with white hair at that point. And but then again, if you're hiring Richard Lynch, right. you want the intensity, right?
Like, try to imagine this movie with Richard Lynch as Jack Death and Tim Thomerson as the villain. It doesn't quite work, does it?
No. And then also, the films of this caliber, they're often painting in very, strict colors, mm-hmm. you want your villain streak, you want your hero streak. You're not necessarily looking for a really complex palette.
So a lot of Richard Lynch's screen time in Trancers 2 is actually on screen. He'll be on a TV screen, like indoctrinating people, indoctrinating his trancer army with weird mantras. Or there's a great part later in the movie, it was one of my favorite parts actually, where he's on a TV show being given a softball interview by Barbara Crampton.
Yeah, yeah. Another B-movie name of note, noted for Reanimator, From Beyond, You're Next, Beyond the Gates, and Lords of Salem as well. But that's some great scenes. Yeah, in this movie, he plays a psychic madman cult leader. So there's plenty of Lynchian depth there for him to get into.
Oh, don't forget Environmental Terrorist.
Yes.
They had to throw that in as well. He's many things to many people in this movie. And it's also funny how it made me think about how I'm not quite sure what this. I wonder if there was like some event in the news that really put this in people's brains. But I really think in the early 1990s, there were a lot of movies about where the villains were eco-terrorists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was, yeah, kind of a maybe a safe place to go in some ways, but also perhaps revealed some anxieties about environmental movements and the the ramifications of or perceived ramifications of environmental movements.
Yeah.
So you do see it a lot.
Weird.
All right. There are other humans in this movie, though. We should get to them.
Oh, yeah.
We have Biff Maynard, or perhaps Biff Mannard. His name is apparently misspelled as Maynard. But anyway, he plays Hap Ashby. This actor was born 1943, died 2014. He's reprising his role from the first film as the one remaining ancestor of the future leader who is a washed-up professional baseball player.
Okay, yes, and he has to be kept alive or else the future politician will not exist.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't say he's a great actor, but he's a decent enough actor, and he has given some wonky lines and reactions in this movie that are fabulous. So he's a treat.
Oh, yeah, he's great. And, his name sort of reads like a sentence somehow. It's like Biff Mannard. It works. And he spends most of the movie getting back on the sauce gradually.
Yes. We were talking about in The Humanoid how, we have a Bond girl in this one. Well, move over, Humanoid, because we don't just have a Bond girl in this one. We have a double Bond girl.
Oh, that's right. Martine Beswick, right?
That's right. She plays Nurse Trotter. It's just a secondary villain role. Mm-hmm. But she was born 1941, still around as of this recording. She was in From Russia with Love in 1963 and Thunderball in 1965.
I was actually so she and Jeffrey Combs, another B movie icon. Mm-hmm. Man, this cast list is gigantic. They are sort of a team in this movie. They don't do much like physical attacking. I mean, I guess they do a little bit, but mostly what they do is sit side by side and kind of give the main characters the side eye, like look at them almost as if to give them withering looks and issue like a self-esteem annihilating, deprecating comment about them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I wouldn't say either. I mean, she definitely gets to bust out some side eye. Jeffrey Combs, who, again, another B movie icon, the reanimator himself, he doesn't have a lot to do in this. He just basically sits around with a goatee, kind of asks Lynch's character what he should do, follows orders, and also confers with the nurse here.
Yeah, his goatee and his shady glare do most of the acting.
All right, I'm gonna largely skip over the McNulty's here, but basically you have an old McNulty and a girl McNulty. Old McNulty is played by this actor Art LeFleur, born 1943. You may have seen him. He played the Babe in The Sandlot. He was in The Blob. He was in Cobra. He was in Field of Dreams. He was even in a Key and Peele sketch.
Huh. He's got slight notes of Buddy Hackett.
Right. Yeah. And then Alison Croft plays Girl McNulty. We'll get into the distinction here. She's born in 1975, went on to appear on Mad Men and Shameless.
I feel like this is the biggest cast list we have ever plowed through in a movie.
I mean, it's like there's something interesting about all of them. Or in the case of the next guy, he's just such a delight on screen, talking about Sonny Carl Davis playing Rabbit.
Tell me about Rabbit.
All right. I couldn't find anything about when he was born, but I think he's still around. Davis has been in a bunch of films, including a bit part in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. But the first place I saw him was in the excellent 1986 horror comedy Terror Vision, in which he plays kind of a creepy satellite TV repair guy.
I think I know who he was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He's the guy who gets Judge Reinhold fired from his job by complaining about he didn't like his food at the restaurant. You remember this?
I don't.
He's like, I think I just want my money back. Yeah, it's him. It's a memorable performance because Sonny Carl Davis he sticks in ya.
He was also in Thelma and Louise, and I think he had a part in The Burbs. But in this, he plays Rabbit, a deranged orderly at the sort of mental institution. We'll get into that in a bit. But he has some cheesy comedic lines that he manages to bring to life delightfully. And the character, Rabbit, would apparently go on to be a staple of the Evil Bong franchise and related Full Moon Pictures. I'm not sure how they brought him back or, if it's just basically little cameos, but essentially he's played Rabbit 9 times.
I get the feeling that what Dick Miller is to the Roger Corman universe, Sonny Carl Davis is to the Full Moon universe.
Yeah, but he's great in this. I ended up really loving Rabbit.
Yeah, I love Rabbit too. One of the many surprises of the film, this fissile balding man with eyelids that open like 8 meters wide is also apparently the heartthrob of the hospital staff. Mm-hmm. Like all the ladies are gaga for Rabbit.
Yeah.
Doesn't make a lot of sense, but okay.
All right, let's see. Real quick, we should mention Thelma Hopkins. She plays Commander Rains in the future. She's reprising her role from Trancers 1. She was part of Tony Orlando and Dawn, that musical act. But she also did a fair amount of TV and film work. She was on Family Matters.
And I realized, I was trying to think, where did I recognize her from? But she plays Aunt Rachel on Family Matters.
Oh, okay.
So she's like the commander of the future cops. In the future, there are a couple of scenes in this, I guess the bookends of the film, that are in the future. And she's sort of like recapping what's going on, explaining the plot, and giving people orders. And there's a very funny scene at the very beginning where she's telling a dyspeptic Art LaFleur that he must go back into the past, and he complains mightily.
Yeah, also remember her character is one of Jack Death's exes. Everything revolves around Jack Death.
Right, yes. When Jack Death is not on screen, everyone's asking, where is Jack Death?
All right, real quick, I'll mention the music. Phil Davies and Mark Ryder did it. They also did the scores for Society and a few other films. And I think Ryder ended up working a bit more on his own. For Trancers, I'll say it's a decent score. It's invisible most of the time. You don't really think about it. But there were other parts of it that I kind of dug. You know, it's electronic, a bit sappy at times, but effective. I think Wardo's theme, so when there's sort of like sinister stuff going on in the asylum, mm-hmm. that's where I would notice the music and be like, all right, this is all right. I can dig this.
Yeah, I don't think I really noticed the music, except I noticed it a little bit right at the beginning. So maybe we should get into the plot breakdown. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
We open on Jack Death and Helen Hunt. I accidentally just called her Helen Haunt, cruising in his classic. Yeah, exactly. Cruising in his classic Corvette. And by the way, Jack Death loves his Corvette. This is very much a point to note in the film.
Yes.
And we get some moody, kind of sad music playing. And this was one of the only points where I really noticed the score. Like I said, there's the dreamy electronic music. The Death's hair is blowing in the wind. And then we get narration. And Jack Death tells us in voiceover, during the last 6 years, I spent a lot of time wandering this part of the California coast. It's tough knowing it's all going to be under the ocean after the killer quakes of 2063. My name is Jack Death. I'm a cop from the future. Trancer detail. And I didn't know it yet, but back up the line, my old supervisor McNulty was on his way to see me. McNulty's a professional pain in the ass, but the council has stuck with him because, like me, he had an ancestor in old California. That's the only way to send someone's consciousness back in time, over the genetic bridge. I hadn't learned about the TCL chamber yet. And then I guess it's really just starting to get very detailed for mm-hmm. voiceover narration. But I stopped because I was thinking, this must present a very bizarre pattern of sort of discrimination in hiring of time cops in the future, right? Like, you have to submit your family tree and details to see if they can find a relative of yours in old California.
Yeah, it's they don't go into it a lot, but like clearly the Trancer, I mean, I guess the Trancers thing was isolated in time at one point, but then the Trancers are moving around in time. Whistler and Whistler's brother are moving around in time, so mm-hmm. that means that your Trancer cops have to become time cops, mm-hmm. and yeah, there you go.
So anyway, we get this opening scene I was talking about where Commander Rains, Thelma Hopkins, is explaining to McNulty how all the time travel stuff works. And this scene, I got to be honest and say, I had to watch this twice. I did not follow the scene at all the first time. I was like, what is going on? I guess you had a leg up because you'd seen the first movie.
Right.
But if you haven't, this one just kind of rolls over you. It's like a wave. But basically, it's the stuff we've already talked about. Your consciousness, if you take a drug, your consciousness can go back in time to an ancestor. It seems mostly you can't travel back in time physically, at least not your whole body. But now there is a machine called the TCL chamber that looks like a crappy version of the Apollo command module. Mm-hmm. And you can send that back in time empty, though nobody can go in it. And then people can get in it in the past physically in their bodies and go forward in time to the future. Got it?
Yeah. And if you don't get it, I just advise you to watch the movies because okay. it's they do a little better job explaining it, I guess, or at least presenting it visually.
So Thelma Hopkins is explaining that they need to send McNulty's consciousness back in time to possess the body of his ancestor, who at this point is a 15-year-old girl in California in 1991, to, I think, tell Jack Death about the TCL chamber that will allow him to get into it and travel back to the future. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Okay. In the last film, McNulty had to go back in time to do the same thing. And in that one, it was like, you know, an 8 to 10-year-old girl that he had to inhabit, which was one of the funnier part, the legitimately funnier parts of Transfers 1, where there's a little girl showing up and she's talking like a, like a tough, rough and tumble, police commander from the future.
Is she smoking a cigar?
No, she's not smoking a cigar, but she's almost smoking a cigar.
Well, in this movie, McNulty's ancestor smokes a cigar, which I think is played for comedy.
Yeah.
I think partially on the basis of some gendered assumptions, but also, I mean, I guess it is funny to see any like 15-year-old chomping on a cigar.
Yeah.
All right. So then Commander Rains explains more of the plot. Again, I did not understand any of this the first time. I had to go back. But so they've sent someone else back in time to the body of an ancestor. And this other person is Jack Death's wife in the future, Alice, who we learn is dead in the future. I don't know if this was established in the first movie, but she has been murdered in the future.
It's weird when we actually discuss it like this. This sounds like the most complicated movie plot of all time.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to think, like, it actually is super complicated. It just doesn't really feel like that in the movie, because all this stuff, you just like, you kind of don't catch it and it doesn't matter. And then you just keep watching.
Yeah.
But so she's dead in the future, but she wasn't dead a few years ago in the future. So they sent somebody back in time, but still to the future, just a few years before in the future, before she died, to tell her that she has to go farther back in time to 1991 so she can, I believe, hunt trancers there.
Right.
And, oh my God, there's so many funny exchanges in this scene where it just gets amazingly complicated. McNulty's like, I thought we killed Whistler and all the trancers in the past. And then Rains is like, but there's a new Whistler in the past, and now he's made new trancers in the past.
Yeah, and I didn't even realize Whistler was I thought there was just the one Whistler. So I've never figured out if Richard Lynch's character in this is truly like Whistler's brother. Is it Whistler himself, his consciousness somehow escaped? They're kind of all over the place briefly explaining who he is supposed to be.
I think I know the answer.
Okay.
I think the answer is that Richard Lynch is playing Whistler's brother, playing a guy named Eduardo Whistler, who is the brother. I think the guy in the first movie is named James Whistler. Is that right?
Possibly. I feel like I looked that up, and I also was confused when I started looking up his name in the first film. But I think you're correct. This is supposed to be Whistler's brother. This is, I guess they all, both siblings had the psychic gift of creating trancers.
Uh-huh. Because there's a scene later on where Helen Hunt and Jack Death are figuring it out in a very Dr. Acula type moment. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, this Richard Lynch is his name is E.D. Wardo. Wait a minute. You know, Whistler had a brother named Eduardo Whistler. It's him, you know, E.D. Wardo. Huh? Get it?
Yeah. All right, good enough for me.
Okay, but I was thinking about Dr. Wardo throughout this movie as Dr. Wario. Okay, now we get a bunch more plot mechanics. There's so much explaining at the beginning of this. So they say, okay, Jack Death, he can't come back to the future the normal serum way because his old body in the future is now, they call it calcified, which I guess would mean it's like all made of bone now, I guess. Like he just can't come back. His body's bad.
Yeah, it looks bad. They show it on a slab, and it's just all gross looking.
Yeah. So he can only come back to the future in the TCL chamber, in that lunar module thing, or not the command module thing. They're sending that back for him. Otherwise, he'll be stuck in the past forever. And then we get introduced to this James Bond gadget we mentioned earlier, the long second watch, which slows time for like 10 seconds, so you can go into bullet time, basically. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then there's a funny part where McNulty is like, hey, Rains, aren't you and Jack Death, you know, you were formerly in love, but you split up. Why would you want him back? And I don't know, the implication there is that, like, if you discovered your ex was stuck in the past, you just leave them stuck in the past. But she's like, look, I can't leave him stuck in the past just because we have a history. We have to think about the future of the future. And and they find out that Jack Death is going to get a seat on the council, which is very important somehow, but it's not really explained, I don't think.
No, the later someone says it's like becoming a king of the universe. So I guess it's really important.
I don't know. Jack Death doesn't come off as like a really terrible person, but I don't know if he seems like the best choice for a king of the universe.
I mean, he's anti-establishment for the most part. You know, he's kind of a rogue cop. He doesn't need to be mayor of the city.
Right, exactly. But one thing I noted when we were first watching this is that the exposition scene here at the beginning just sounds like a transcript of the pitch meeting. It's just somebody describing the, like, basically the concept of the movie. But then there was also a really funny part here. I took a screen grab for you to look at where while she's explaining everything to him, a technician in a lab coat comes up and just starts trying to undress McNulty, like reaches over to his coat, and McNulty is very irritated.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
But anyway, okay, so the action starts when we go back to the past, to 1991, where Jack Death and Helen Hunt are driving around, and they drive up to Hap's house. Remember, Hap is the guy who he originally had to go back in time to protect, because he's the ancestor of a future politician. And here I started noticing one of my favorite types of awkward cinematography, which is regular dialogue scenes where there's nothing particularly intense going on, where the camera is way too close to the actors. So like, a standard way of shooting dialogue between two characters today is alternating cuts between what are usually called over-the-shoulder shots. So you shoot from roughly, over the shoulder of where the other person in the conversation would be. You know, there are other choices you can make. It's an open art form. But a lot of times this movie will be cutting back and forth between people talking, and it's cutting between what is basically just extreme close-ups of people's faces while they're talking, and the effect is very funny. I could screen cap many examples, but I just included one here for just Helen Hunt talking. I think she's talking about wanting to go house hunting, and it's like right up in her pores.
Yeah, it's one thing if it's Richard Lynch, because Richard Lynch is generally saying intense villain stuff and staring into your soul when they're doing these close-ups. But this is a scene where they're just talking about sort of side character stuff, about how she really wants to settle down and get a house, and he doesn't feel ready.
Yeah, and then it cuts back to him, and he's being kind of being a jerk about it. I don't want to spend a day with some pencil neck real estate agent going house hunting, but we're right up in his pores too, and they're just a mile wide, and it's wow, it's amazing. Another thing, so they get to Hap's house. Hap lives in this mansion, which is this hideous property, where he's restoring an antique fire truck. And I was wondering, is this something from the first movie? Was Hap in Trancers 1 a fire truck enthusiast?
Hap in the first movie was a former pro baseball player that is now homeless, and is suffering from alcoholism. And so in this, they've sobered him up, and I don't remember it being explained why, but he's set up in this ugly mansion that's decorated like something a stereotypical divorced middle-aged dad would dream up, where you're restoring a fire truck and all the decoration inside the house is like fire trucks and baseball memorabilia, and there's a big old bar in the center of everything.
Maximum Baseball. It's like the concept of a man cave, but it's this entire mansion.
Better description. Yeah, it's full man cave mansion, and it's just ridiculous.
He's got 36 dart boards. Yeah.
So I don't know where Hap got this money, but they're living with Hap, like kind of like looking after him as parents.
I think so. Yeah. Which is especially funny. We'll get back to that in just a second. But there was also a funny exchange. So they're like, why did Jack Death come back to Hap's house? What are they doing here? I thought they were supposed to be on vacation or a honeymoon or something. But he's like, Hap, I had to come back because I had a funny feeling. And then Hap goes, no, not Trancers again, Jack. And then it cuts to not dialogue in the scene, but voiceover of Jack Death saying, I'd been having a strange feeling, the feeling I get when there are Trancers around.
Just to make it clear.
But then anyway, Lena, Helen Hunt's character, announces that she has to get Hap to bed. Why does Lena have to make Hap go to bed? It's like he's a child and they're babysitting him just permanently.
I mean, he looks like he's in his late 50s or early 60s here.
Yeah.
And yet they refer to this a couple of times in the movie, that they are still kind of grooming this guy to eventually procreate, to produce the offspring that the world depends on. Like the ancestor that ends up being the ruler of the future apparently has not been produced yet by this specimen of a man here. So I'm not really sure how that's going to work out.
Yeah.
But I think they could have done an interesting sitcom with them essentially raising Hap. I don't know, Meet the Deaths, Death Family Matters, I don't know.
Very good, yes. I would watch that sitcom.
But this is the life they've created for them, but that life is about to be turned upside down by Trancers.
Right. Oh, wait, if it was the sitcom, Richard Lynch would become the Urkel of it. He'd be like the nerdy next-door neighbor who keeps showing up, and he's like, look, I've figured out how to create Trancers.
Oh, man, it would be the most intense Did I Do That ever.
Like, yes.
Richard Lynch staring like straight into your bones.
Did I do that? But then we cut to the next morning, and there's several things going on at the same time. One of them, I guess, is a conversation between Helen Hunt and Jack Death about house hunting. We sort of mentioned that already. But also, there's just an immediate Trancer attack. A landscaping company shows up. The camera lingers ominously on a guy with a shovel who's working in the yard. So it's like, wow, I wonder what's going to happen. You think he's going to be a Trancer? And then Hap goes out to be like, hey, you know, good job digging on the lawn. And the guy immediately, like, his face wargs out and he gets these gross forked lightning veins coming down his cheeks. And also there's just random dirt on his forehead and some kind of dark liquid dripping out of his eyes.
Yeah, they, at this point, a trancer has been triggered out of their, like, sleeper cell mode.
Yeah.
And they're just full-on maniacal attack mode. And then one of the interesting things is if the trancer is then killed with, like, a laser gun or in the first film or in this, you know, just shot with normal munitions, once they hit the ground, they will disintegrate and leave, like, a smoking outline of their body on the ground.
Yeah, they turn into red lasers and disintegrate, yeah.
Yeah, and it's totally unexplained why. Why would this happen? I guess it has to do, maybe, I don't know, the psychic powers are somehow linked. They create the trancers are linked to this idea of consciousness and time, and I don't know.
But anyway, so this is going on. The trancer attack happens while Jack Death and Lena are talking about wanting – well, Helen Hunt wants to buy a house, and Jack Death is being a jerk about it because he does not want to spend time touring homes. He's just, yeah, no, I don't want to.
Yeah, a lot of man-child elements in this movie.
Yes, and then they're talking about it. I guess they sort of make up, and they're talking about their future, and they're kissing, and then Jack Death suddenly perks up. His Spidey senses are going, and he's like, trancers. And so the landscaper trancer and his crew are trying to kill Hap, but Jack Death, hilariously, it's like he's riding in on a horse to save the day, but instead he drives up on them in a golf cart, steering with one hand and shooting with the other. And this was maybe my biggest laugh out loud moment of the movie. Very, very strong.
It's very, very great. And played, like a lot of stuff in this film, most of the things in this film, played seriously.
Yes, which makes it work much better.
Yeah.
So Jack Death defeats the trancers, and it's like, oh, I thought we dealt with all the trancers. I wonder if there's a new Whistler in the past. But immediately, McNulty arrives in his ancestor's body on a bicycle, and there's a bunch more exposition, explains all this stuff about time travel, basically rehashes a lot of what we learned earlier, explains about the TCL chamber. They end up setting up a tent in the yard to hide the time machine when it arrives from the future.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Very, very cheap move on the production. I like it.
I'm not sure exactly what the quality was. It's something about her line delivery, but Rachel and I kept noticing that the actress who plays McNulty's ancestor, who is good, like she's funny in this, she has very all Garfield energy. I'm referring to an actress from a sketch in I Think You Should Leave. It's the sketch with the intervention for Tim Robinson that's in the Garfield house, you know, where she's saying like, yeah, but it's a total party house.
Yeah, I had to look this back up, but that's a fun sketch.
Yeah.
The actor I think you're referring to is Kate Berlant.
Yeah,
who
she's
born
great.
She was born in 87, so she's actually younger than Trancers 1.
Wow, she's very funny in that sketch. By the way, we quote it all the time. You kind of quote. We were for the rest of the movie. We were kind of like pointing all around, and you know, like she says, all Garfield as she points it out to her friends. It's like all Trancers. But anyway, so we get a transition to. This whole other plot. And this whole other plot is unknown to Jack Death and Lena. Jack Death's wife from the future, Alice Stillwell, is also still in the past in the body of her ancestor, but she's trapped in this place run by Richard Lynch's people. It's this evil cult pseudo-psychiatric hospital that is operated by New Whistler's goons.
Yeah, and actually the plot element here is kind of fun, I thought this was pretty creative, is that since you just kind of, you know, quantum leap back in time to your ancestor in the time period you're going to. Well, she was sent back to 85, but as it turns out, her ancestor was in a mental institution at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So she instantly was trapped in the institution. And I imagine it was, I guess, exasperated by her claiming or acting like she wasn't herself. And then she wasn't able to get to her special watch with the long second. So she's just been lost this whole time.
Yeah, so it's a major bummer. And then we meet several characters here. So she's trapped in there. We meet Rabbit. anything else we need to say about Rabbit? No, I mean, you know Rabbit at this point. Also, we meet the villains, Martine Beswick and what's his name? Jeffrey Combs. They're just sitting around sort of looking judgmentally at everyone. Now, obviously, this is not a real psychiatric hospital providing care to its patients. It is basically a transfer factory that is being run by Richard Lynch, and they're playing TVs of him creepy talking at the patients all night long, you know.
Yeah, we come to learn that basically his scheme here, in the first film we learned that you can't make a transfer out of like a strong-willed person.
Right.
In order for Whistler or Whistler's brother to use their psychic power to turn you into this zombie-like thrall, you have to be kind of... of a weakened state mentally. And so this whole operation, this transfer factory, transfer farm, is about weakening people like mentally with pharmaceuticals, we find out later, so that then he can easily control them and easily manipulate them and create like a transfer army.
Yeah, exactly. So Alice stages an escape from this facility while the orderly Rabbit is busy having a midnight rendezvous with another orderly who I guess is his girlfriend. They're like hanging out to drink vodka mixed with orange soda.
Yeah.
Just looks pretty gross. I don't know. Maybe that's a drink some people have. I don't know. It was... Ugh.
I mean, I guess it depends on the orange soda. Maybe you got a nice orange soda.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Worse
I don't know.
Things.
It looked like one of those like really neon, you know, the traffic cone orange soda.
The perfect cocktail for drinking on the job in a broom closet at an unlicensed mental institution run by a cult leader.
Right. So they're planning, I guess, to drink on the job and do no good. But they get interrupted by Alice's breakout. And then everybody gives chase. And then Alice eventually... She escapes, I think, actually multiple times, but at some point she discovers the time machine, the TCL chamber. It's in a barn somewhere, but then she is captured and taken back to Whistler House. And then we cut back to our main characters, Jack Death, McNulty in his ancestor's body, Helen Hunt. They're all hanging around in this tent they've put up on the yard where they're supposed to receive the time machine. But there's a problem because it doesn't actually show up. They just get the door of it. So they obviously need to connect with Alice because she knows where the rest of the time machine is. And so they're standing around, and then there's also just tons of this movie has a lot of scenes of characters explaining to each other things that the audience already knows from previous explaining scenes.
Yes.
But one of the funny things is in this scene, you get to see the characters react. So McNulty explains to Jack Death and Helen Hunt that his wife is back here in the present. And an incredulous Helen Hunt is like, "You have a wife? I thought she was dead." And he's like, "No, honey, I can explain. She's dead in the future, but now she's alive in the past," which again was very funny. But they need her help to figure out where the time machine is. So they're trying to look into that. Meanwhile, Jack Death goes to investigate the landscaping company who sent trancers to Hap's house. And at first they deny knowing anything. They're like, "No, I don't know. I think somebody stole our truck. That must have been them, not us." So we meet this red-haired burly guy with a beard and then a forklift operator named Ramon who has an awesome outfit. He has like this striped sort of like, what do you call it? The two-third length sleeve T-shirt with stripes and it's tucked into his pants with a belt and he's got cool boots. And so I loved Ramon and his outfit, and I really wanted him to stick around. But alas, like most other characters you meet, turns out to be a trancer.
Yeah. I'd say one of the big flaws in these films, and that doesn't really take away from enjoyment, is that trancers are not really scary. They look kind of dumb.
Agreed. So the trancers attack him. There's a great forklift fight scene where they like pin him to a bunch of 2x4s with a forklift, but he uses his long second watch to sort of get around behind them and defeat the trancers.
Yep. Got to work in use of the gadget.
But eventually, after all this, they find out that the evil transfer factory hospital and landscaping company, I think, are actually all run by the same organization, which is Richard Lynch's organization, which is Green World, a sadistic environmentalist transfer cult. And Helen Hunt does online research on her computer. Again, this is 1991, so I don't know about this, but she's on her computer reading articles to discover that the director of the bad organization, the Green World, is one E.D. Wardo. And this is where they do the Dr. Acula moment, where they put everything together. But also she's describing the organization Green World, and she's like, "They sell organic cookies," that kind of thing.
Yeah, and the more we learn about Wardo's operation, it's I ended up enjoying this quite a bit. Having a nice cult leader madman situation, and that VHS tape that they keep playing, where he's like using this to mind warp the thralls. It's really good. It has this this loop to it where he's saying things like "You belong in a green world."
Oh yeah. And when he gets interviewed by Barbara Crampton on TV later, it's hilarious because he's saying these things that are just obviously evil, but she's like, "Oh, that's nice." He's like, "You know, we bring people to our facility and we cleanse them."
Yeah, those scenes with the there are two of them from that interview. Those are some of my favorite parts of the film. And I think if there are any DJs out there and you want some cool cryptic samples to put into your mix, look to this film and look to those scenes where Wardo is talking to the TV host, because there's some fun stuff in there.
There's also a getting ready to fight montage, not montage. I don't know what you call it. Like the scene in the movie where like the hero suits up. Often they'll like put on their gun belt or something. But in this movie, it's not putting on the gun belt. It's Jack Death slicking his hair back.
Yep, that's one of his signature moves. They have that in the first film too, where one of the first things he does when he inhabits his ancestor's body is to find a nice like tin of pomade and start greasing back.
He's a Dapper Dan man.
He is.
So Jack Death eventually, a bunch of stuff happens. Jack Death eventually ends up rescuing his other wife from the future, from the Green World facility. It's kind of funny. He like rescues her while she's on like a gurney, and he like just loads the whole thing into his Corvette while she's still attached to it. And then he unstraps her later after like they escape from the bad guys. But then there's this hilarious dialogue when they talk things through. It's like, "Are you who I think you are? Are you who I think you are? Stillwell, Alice B." And then he goes, "Welcome to old California, Alice. I'm your husband, Jack Death."
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's so stupid. It's kind of sweet.
It is. It's such a man boy movie in so many ways, but it's too dumb and good hearted to really offend.
Yeah. Well, a bunch of the middle section of the movie is concerned with basically two subplots. One is the Time Wives subplot, which is this marriage conflict, because Helen Hunt, it seems, is not a fan of the fact that Jack Death now has two wives at the same time. And Jack Death's reaction to the situation is just this kind of, I don't know, he's kind of furrowing his eyebrows, inexpressibly frustrated, but at the same time kind of passive with this, like, "What am I supposed to do?" kind of attitude. and his future wife keeps kissing him, and he's clearly into it, and Helen Hunt doesn't like this. I think it seems clear that Jack Death would like, if he could, to marry both women.
Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to think deep and hard about this. And like, maybe it's, you know, it's kind of like Jack Death is unstuck in time, you know, like he's, you know, it's not so much as like, "She was my wife and you are my wife now." It's like, "You were both my wives in different," I don't know. Yeah. Once you start traveling around in time, it gets screwy.
There is a really great scene. This is one of the funny ones where Helen Hunt is like forced to deliver absolutely absurd dialogue. There's a long one here where she has a scene with Jack Death and she's saying, "I've had to handle a lot being married to someone from the future, Jack, but two wives?" And eventually there's also a confrontation between them where Alice from the future is telling Helen Hunt that, you know, basically she needs to step aside. And she's like, "He needs me to defeat Wardo. I'm a Trancer Hunter. All you bring to the party is stuff for Jack to worry about." And so eventually Helen Hunt leaves. She's had enough of this Time Wives confusion. And as she's about to leave, Alice says to her, "I'm sorry, Lena, but you should have known better than to get involved with a man from the future."
Again, though, Helen Hunt is great in these scenes.
Oh, yeah.
She's believable.
Yes.
in these scenes with all this ridiculous dialogue.
She is a really good actress, and she sells it in a great way. She does not do a great job, I think, of convincingly portraying being in love with Jack Death.
Well, yeah, maybe not. Maybe not that. But everything else.
I don't know. It's a tall order there. Mm-hmm. But then, okay, so then there's another thing, which is that Hap, they keep talking about how he's getting back on, quote, the sauce. And so he begins drinking again. And as a result of drinking, he gets baseball-itis. Like he becomes obsessed with playing baseball. And so he starts, like he buys a bunch of liquor for a bunch of homeless guys and starts playing baseball with them. And they have to go find him and retrieve him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, It's ridiculous, but kind of funny at times. I don't know. Hard to decide where I stand on it, but they go for it.
So one of the best parts of the movie, as we mentioned, is when E.D. Wardo goes on the Sadie Brady show with Barbara Crampton, and it's like this talk show where she's giving these, I don't know, well, if it's so many funny things about it. Number one, they're sitting in rolling office chairs with, like, mm-hmm. you know, the casters on the bottom. Another thing is that she asks questions like, what do you say to allegations that, you know, Green World is kidnapping people and turning them into mindless zombies? And he's like, many people have had their lives destroyed by pollution. In our detox centers, we cleanse and purify these individuals. We give them a new mission in life so they can help us cleanse and purify the planet. Yeah, sounds legit, right?
Yeah.
But so that's on TV, and at some point Jack Death is watching that at the house, and then it cuts away from the Sadie Brady show to show a trailer for Robot Jocks, except it's a movie called Crash and Burn.
Yeah, I believe this is a follow-up to Robot Jocks that was directed by Charles Band, uh-huh. Came out in 1990. So he it's not just a subtle trailer, it's like a straight-up, here's the trailer. I think we mentioned this one in passing when we talked about Robot Jocks, because this is the sequel that has Bill Moseley in it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I think from here on out, I think maybe our summary should become a little more cursory so as not to spoil everything. But they realize, of course, that Richard Lynch is growing drugs from the future in his greenhouse. And these drugs are called Skerb 78. I don't know how you spell Skerb. I tried S-K-E-R-B. What do you think?
Sounds good to me.
These are the drugs he uses to make his Trancer army. And eventually, Helen Hunt, of course, is kidnapped by Richard Lynch and taken to Green World for, let's say, in the parlance of Halloween 3, final processing. And they have to stage a rescue mission. Everybody gets there to bust out Helen Hunt. Oh, and they also end up escaping with Rabbit, who takes their side, but who is tragically killed in the getaway. And when Rabbit died, I think I cried out. I was like, no, you can't do that to Rabbit.
I mean, on one level, we know he's going to be back in the Full Moon universe. But I also right. like to think that in the future, they will realize that Rabbit made the ultimate sacrifice to save them. And so Rabbit will – there'll be just massive statues of Rabbit smiling maniacally.
Yeah.
But this is all leading to the final battle, of course, the final showdown.
Right. They end up in the barn that is housing the time machine that can send the physical body back to the future because Alice from the future knew where that was. There's a big shootout final scene there. There's in a kind of fun way. I don't think this final battle is all that great, except that mm-hmm. low tech saves the day.
Yeah.
Like they end up sort of defeating the Trancers with like a tractor and a pitchfork and things like that.
Yeah, for a final battle between time cops and a zombie thrall creating psychic mastermind and his yeah. goons, it's pretty straightforward.
But then there's sort of time travel to the rescue at the end. They use the Deus Ex Machina of time travel. Actually, you know what? To be fair, it's not a Deus Ex Machina because it's set up by the rest of the film. It's not like mm-hmm. out of nowhere. They use the mechanics of time travel to resolve the character tension because what's it going to be? You know, Jack Death has two wives and he kind of wants to be married to both wives. But ultimately he decides, no, I'm only going to stay married to Helen Hunt, my wife from the past. And I'm going to stay here in the past. And Alice, his wife in the future, she's going to, instead of seruming back into her original body in the future and then getting murdered, she's going to travel into the future in the TCL chamber in her 1991 body so that she can't be murdered in the way that she originally would have been. Though that would seem to create a paradox because if she travels
something in this film creates a paradox.
Because if she travels back to the future in that body, how can that body become her ancestor?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Yes.
The Trancers franchise, I think, is very much a paradox-free time travel system where, again, you have...
It's going to be fine.
Yeah, it's all going to work out. Don't think too hard about it. In fact, I think he even says something to that effect at one point. He's like, it'll work out fine. You know, somebody has a question about time travel. He's like, no, it's fine. It works.
If you're wondering how they eat and breathe and other science facts, you know, it's Trancers. Just relax.
All right. Well, that's Trancers 2. I myself look forward to watching Trancers 3. Who knows what it'll consist of.
I think we're going to go deep into the Trancers sequels, and you know what? If they're worthy of discussion, we will discuss them.
Yeah. Otherwise, maybe I'll mention it in passing. I don't know. We'll see. Now, you might be wondering, where can I see Trancers and Trancers 2 for myself? Well, I will say that the Full Moon Features channel is a great hookup in this department. You can subscribe to this on iPhone, Apple TV, Android, Roku, Xbox One, all the things. Plus, it's also a channel on Prime. That's how I ended up watching it. Full Moon is not a sponsor. I want to be clear on that. I'm just telling you how you can potentially watch the movie. Trancers 2 is also highly available for digital rent or purchase, as well as on Blu-ray. And Joe, where did you watch this this gem of a film?
Oh, I watched this on Tubi.
All right. So you can go to Tubi and watch it as well. At one point, Full Moon put out Trancers, the Ultimate Death Collection, which was a 5-disc set. That did not include Trancers 6 because I guess it wasn't out yet. One thing, say what you will about Full Moon, they get the product out there. They make it available. They're even like remastering stuff, I noticed. So Full Moon fans are in luck.
Okay, if they want me on the hook for Trancers 7, I'm going to need some of the cast of Trancers 2 to return.
I think Helen Hunt should come back.
Yes.
Why not? I mean, she doesn't need to come back at this point. But what if they got a good enough screenplay together? Which could happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It could
work. She could even be the main Trancer. I don't know what happens to her character. I haven't seen 3 yet or the subsequent films. But with time travel, anything is possible. You know, whatever you need in the Trancers universe can be provided by the multiple paradox-free time travel systems in place.
What if one of her descendants becomes a villain in the future and then has to serum back into her body to be a villain in the past?
Sure. Wow. Let's do it.
That's my pitch. If that wasn't already Trancers for Death and Taxes.
Yes. All right. Obviously, we'd love to hear from everyone out there. Have you seen the Trancers films? Did you watch the first? I would love to hear from someone who saw Trancers 1 in the theater. What was that like? Do you remember seeing these films in your video rental store? What are some death-related titles you can imagine for sequels and TV sitcom spinoffs? We'd love for you to share all of that with us. In the meantime, if you want to check out other episodes of Weird House Cinema, you will find it every Friday in the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast feed. Friday is the day when we enjoy weird movies and we geek out on them excessively. The rest of the time, we're a science podcast. So our core episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind are on Tuesday and Thursday. We have a short form artifact episode on Wednesdays, and Monday, that's listener mail where we talk about things you've written in to us about regarding all the shows.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild.
conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.